Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I want to walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go.
I didn't do shithole weather, and I will before we get done, okay? I just got a text message from Rudy, all right? Rudy says this, right? I'm pulling for the 49ers to beat the crap out of Rodgers this weekend. One time I'm a 49er fan since Joe Montana. Bro, Richard Sherman's a 49er, okay? He used to be a Seahawk, so get with the program, man. Right? Come on. Joining me from Hawaii, of all places, is Chris from Webster, Massachusetts. What is up, Cox?
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, man. First of all, what are you doing? You're supposed to be holding down Massachusetts, man. What are you doing in Hawaii?
We like to come over here for vacation, sir. So we come over every January, in the middle of January, and it breaks up the winter.
Well, that's not a bad plan. Who thought of that? Obviously, your wife thought of that, because you're probably not smart enough to figure that shit out, right?
Well, I agree with it that she's definitely the smarter person in the relationship. But I started coming over here before I met my wife. So it's a collaborative effort on both our parts.
Okay, all right. So what is it to go now that you're svelte and not a fat man? Like, it's got to be a different experience, though. Yay.
Yes, sir. It is a completely different experience. Even just the flight alone, sir. I haven't had, when I got out of Marine Corps, I got out in 88.
Right.
I flew home from Jacksonville to Boston. And, I was in the Marine Corps ship back then. And then I didn't fly until 95, when we came over here. And, I've always had to use one of them damn belt seat extenders.
Explain to everybody what that is.
A seat extender is when you sit in a chair on the plane and you're too fat to use the buckles that are there. So you have to ask the stewardess for an extension, and then you have to plug it in and use it. So you don't only get the shame of being fat, but then you have to ask for help, And then this year was the very first time that we either didn't have to buy an additional seat, or I had to ask for a seatbelt extender. Right off the bat, it just feels so much better, and you feel normal. You feel like, wow, I'm a regular person now.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Yeah, when I flew from Charlotte to Phoenix last Saturday, the plane's filling up, and I'm thinking, and the seat in the middle, nobody's sitting in there. I'm sitting by the window. And then the last person on the plane, man, fucking Jabba the Hutt coming down, and I'm like, no, come on, man. Do not start looking at, looking at aisle numbers, right, when you get near me, and bigger than shit, he starts. And then he looks at the seat, I'm like, oh, man. Right? He had me pinned against the fucking window the whole time. I'm like part of the fuselage, that fucker.
Sir, I actually referred to myself as Jabba the Hutt when I was like, because you feel like it, and you are.
No, I don't mean to be, I don't mean to be hating on anybody, okay? But, I paid for my seat. He didn't have any right to be gushing into my seat. but it happens.
Well, sir, it's true. And some of the smaller airlines make people purchase a seat, an extra seat. You know, and for at least 4 or 5 years, we purchased an extra seat just so we could not have to deal with the middle seat. You know, somebody walking down the line.
Because the first half of the flight, I pushed back on it, right? I leaned left to make sure that he would not get into my shit, right? And then I said, fuck it, I'm leaning right. I'll be pinned against the fuselage. Did you feel like standing up and go, booyah, Cox in the hizzy?
Yeah, I'm pretty, my wife says that I'm a little obnoxious about it because I'm so happy about things like that, you know? And,
Nothing wrong.
You know, the way you look at it, I did it. I'm proud of it. I earned it, you know?
Hey, no shade. And, let me tell you, no shit, man. I tell your story, at times during post-traumatic winding. It's not a regular feature, but if something comes up or somebody says something, and I'll say, hey, look, let me just tell you, you know, and let me tell you how I relate it to them. I want to say the sixth commandment is you got to talk about your shit and stay connected to your tribe. And one of the things that you said when I interviewed you was the importance of reconnecting via Almarine Radio to your tribe, right? That you not only reconnected to a part of yourself, but, you know, on a daily basis, you know, hearing, you know, the discussions, hearing our sense of humor, you know, right? And just the way, you know, what it is to be in the Marine Corps, which is what Almarine Radio is about, helped reconnect you to a piece of yourself that helped you get to where you are today. And for those of you who've never heard Chris's story, going from 500 pounds to what are you today?
I weighed myself before we left last Friday, and I weighed the same as when I sent it to you. I weighed 238.8.
238.8, right? And the most you ever weighed was what?
500 pounds.
Nice.
Probably a little more, but my scale didn't go up that high.
Yeah.
You know, which should have been telling me something.
A little bit. No, but you know, fuck that part of the story. You know, your story is an incredible story, right, of perseverance, and a lot of people never come back from that, Chris. And I'll tell you, the part of that story that I tell when I talk about stay connected to this tribe, stay connected to the good friends that you meet here, because they will tell you the truth, man. They will tell you the truth. And when you're getting ready to screw your life up, it's these people that know you, right? They know you. They know you like, you know, we're all in a room and somebody farts. Nobody has to ask who that is. They know you like that, know you, right?
They don't look at shame on you. They don't look at you with shame when you did it either.
No, they look at you. They look at you and they just say, "Really?" And you're like, "What?" Like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna play that fucking game." It's those people, because they will help you when you're gonna. They'll just tell you the truth, man. You know. And so I tell that story, Chris, and I tell them about you, and you know, it's just that they, it just deepens, right? The power of the message. And then I tell them, all this shit that I've learned that I'm giving you today, I've learned it all from Marines. And so stay connected, you know, stay connected to this tribe.
Because it is a good, it's an excellent connection, sir. And it goes across, like, long periods of time. A day or two, like, the EGA bonds us together. We all have that common core experience. And like you said, if we've made it through Bukit, or you've made it through OCS, you have it within you to do whatever is in front of you. And you've always said that we can't affect anything that's in the past. We can only affect what's in the future. And it's so true. So you just have to work hard and know that you can do it. Anyone can do it. You don't have to lose half your body weight. You can lose, think about like a normal person's weight. Like say some guy is, you know, 200, you know, guy gets out of Marine Corps, you know, he gains 20 pounds. You know, he can lose that weight. But listening to like other people and just accepting what isn't good is easier than the initial effort. because the initial effort is hard and it sucks and it hurts. But once you get past that, so much more opens up to you. So much more. I mean, just in my case, just to be able to walk through the damn airport, sir.
No, well, let me tell you the story I tell when I talk about you. The story that I tell is the first time I interviewed you, or it might have been the second. I'm not sure. It might have been the second. You know, we're talking. I said, so give us a live weather update. And you did. And I said, oh, shoveling snow today. That sucks. And you said, no, it doesn't, sir. You said, I like it. And then you said, you know what really sucks? Is when you're too fat to do it and you're laying in bed listening to your wife do it. And I was like, holy fuck. I tell that story and I use that as an illustration of why, you know, what you found, you know, as you reconnected to your culture and you reconnected to, you know, honestly, Chris, a piece of you.
Yes, being a Marine is integral to what I was a Marine, and it is integral to who I am today.
All right, so
it's the proudest thing I've done in my life, sir.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think you have a few other accomplishments. What are you guys doing in What are you guys doing in Hawaii?
We come over here and we just hang out. We just relax. We go to the beach. In Hawaii, there's so many different things to do. And they don't have to be like activity type things. Like for example, this morning we're going to spend a few hours at the beach, and then we'll probably go up to the north shore of Maui. There's some nice small towns up there. There's some windsurfers, the surfing beaches. There's a beach called Ho'okipa that in the afternoon the sea turtles come up on the beach, and you can get right up close to them, take pictures. Tomorrow we're going to go out to the southeastern end of the island. It's called the Hana area. There's a hike that I've been wanting to go on for years, and we hope to make that tomorrow. It's been very wet over here, so it could be a little sloppy. But just that, sir. It's just vacation, and you know, we just enjoy it. We run into people that we've met years past. Canadians, a lot of Western Canada folks come down, and we met a couple yesterday that we've seen for years now. And that's just basically what we do. Just hang out, enjoy the good weather, you know, watch the weather back home and giggle, you know.
What is, do you have a, give me, I'm obviously a history fan, are you a, is there, what's the coolest historical thing that you've seen in Hawaii?
In Hawaii. Okay. Overall, sir, over on Oahu, the best thing, obviously, is Pearl Harbor. I've been over to Pearl Harbor a couple of times. I haven't been since they expanded it because they have, like, an air component now.
Right.
But when I saw it, you walk into Pearl Harbor, and they have a small museum, and it was quite a while ago that I was over there, so They used to have veterans from that era there, but, you know, most of those guys are in their 90s now, so I'm not sure if they do. But, so you walk through a little museum, and then you sit in a theater, and it shows, like, a run-up to World War II. And then you go out the back, and you get on a launch driven by the Navy, okay? And they bring you out to the Arizona. And, sir, the sailors that drive those launches, I have a boat and I can put it on the dock, but those guys ease it like silk, just going into the ramp, you know. And then you get off the launch and you get onto the Arizona Memorial. And you've seen it; it's white and it's kind of rectangular, and it sits over the Arizona. So ever since I was a kid, you know, my grandfather was in World War II, so I was always fascinated by that. And I always knew that, like, the oil came up from the Arizona, so I have to see it. And you can stand there, and the oil comes up from the Arizona. And if you're on the right, if you're on the left side of the monument, looking left, the Missouri is right there. And, you know, the beginning of the war was when they killed us in the Arizona. And the end of the war was right there on the Missouri. You know, and the war Wall has all the guys that were killed on the Arizona, and then the Marine Corps detachment is listed on the bottom right, and it lists the Marines that were on the Arizona and that were killed. So Pearl Harbor on Oahu is best. But for ourselves, for our tribe, here on Maui, later in the week, I'll send you some pics. They have a thing called the 4th Marine Division Memorial Park up in Haiku, Maui. That park is a big area where Marines to go fight on, like, Saipan and Iwo Jima. So, and they did it over on the Big Island, too, because on the Big Island is a training area, and there's lots of volcanic humps, and there's one specific volcanic hump that they trained because it mimics Suribachi.
Oh, no shit. Oh, that's right. That's 28th Marines trained there.
I believe it is 28th Marines. Sir.
Oh, take it from me, motherfucker. You don't need to believe shit, man. That's 28th Marines. That's where they trained. And, in fact, there's a book I would tell you to read, Chris, and it's called Lions of Iwo Jima.
And, I'm sure I've read it, sir.
Oh, my God. It's about 28th Marines. It's written by, his name escapes me, he was an opso. Later went on, Fred Haynes wrote it, and it's an awesome story about the 28th Marine Regiment. They were, about half of the Marines in there were former Marine Raiders, and they were former Paramarines, so they had this mixture of brand new guys and these really salty experienced guys, and that's how they created the 5th Marine Division and the 28th Marines specifically, and then they trained on that island. They had a corpsman who got a lion for his child as a birthday present, purchased it from the L.A. Zoo. And then his wife, he brings it home for the baby's birthday, for the kid's birthday, and his wife says, get that thing out of here. Like, are you out of your mind? So he takes it.
Cat.
Yeah, he takes it with him down to Pendleton. Now, 28th Marines gets ready to go to Hawaii to train. So they quarantine the lion. Right? They put him on the ship, and they take him to Hawaii. And they have, like, the division band, the regimental band and shit. They do a parade through Hilo. And there's pictures of the fucking lion on a leash walking through Hilo with the regimental band playing behind it for their daily parade. And then there's a picture of a first sergeant using the lion's tail to, like, swirl his shaving cream in a cup. And then put it on his face? Right. And they said, you know, and that's where the book title comes, Lions of Iwo Jima, 28th Marines. Yeah. It's an awesome book, too, by the way.
Sir, a yes. Lion with a Marine Corps unit, totally acceptable. You know? Like the other services, they'd be kind of like, what the hell's going on here? But us, like, yeah, that's right.
That's right. We got a lion. Well, and they would say this, like our mascot's a lion. You know, what is your, you know, who leads your regiment, jackasses? And
right.
And then I'll tell you, there's another story about a dog they took to Iwo Jima. Like they, you know, they grab a dog as a pet on Hawaii, and so they're getting ready. They're packing all their shit up. Right, they're leaving. Right. What do we do with Fido? Take him with us. So they take the dog to Iwo Jima. Now they're going ashore. He stays on. He lives with them on the ship. Now they're going ashore, and they're like, we got to take him with us. The dog survives the battle. And it shows pictures of the dog with his combat action ribbon on his collar and his Pacific Campaign ribbon on his collar. I mean, it's all...
They had cars back then? Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. Shit, yeah.
Was it a Doberman? Because I remember.
No. It's this little fucking half dachshund, half something else. Mutt shit.
Well, that's fitting because we're the smallest group in the services.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So I would tell you, it's a great book. And it talks about Harry Liversedge, right? Liversedge Hall and all that shit. But Harry the Horse was the regimental commander of 28th Marines, and specifically selected because 28th Marines was going to go up that mountain. And they talk about, you know, the officers going out on Liberty in Hawaii, and Liversedge is a big dude. I think he's an Olympic athlete. I want to say he's shot putter, discus thrower, or something like that. And he's playing slot machines. And, you know, and he's like Guadalcanal guy, you know, one of those kind of guys. So all of a sudden they hear this huge crash. And Liversidge got pissed, and he picked the slot machine up, and he threw it through the fucking window.
How heavy was that with all the change in it, too, sir?
The regimental commander.
What would happen today?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? It'd be all over Navy. Marine Corps time. Oh, email. Mahalo, Chris. You're a blessing. Keep on keeping on. From Nancy in Western Pennsylvania. So Nancy says hi.
I listened to her. Did an interview with her replayed it a while. I don't think I had ever heard her speak. She has a good story, sir.
No. Yeah. It's amazing. You know, the people who listen to All Marine Radio all around the world. And, some of them just listen. Some of them will, I will meet, Bev up in Saskatchewan. I mean, she has a very interesting, life story. And, your life story and Nancy's life story. Nancy, in no way, shape, or form connected to the Marine Corps, but found it. And now is a devotee. And she's working to bring post-traumatic winning up to yeah. Western Pennsylvania. So
yep.
we'll see what happens. So anyway, all right. What's on the plan for today?
Believe it or not, sir, I think I may try stand up paddleboarding. Okay?
You say that right? Can you even in your mind, given your life experience, believe those words are coming out of your mouth?
Now, yes. And even when I was heavy, I always wanted to do more stuff, and I did. I stayed fairly active, but not close to what I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And now there's nothing that I won't try if I'm interested. Especially when it comes to water. I like the ocean, and I scuba dive, and anything with the water, I'm willing to try. I went scuba diving yesterday. I included some of that stuff in shithole weather.
I can't do that because of my ears, which doesn't make me happy. But such is life, right? Such is life.
Yeah. What's wrong with your ears? You can't equalize, or?
Well, I have a perforated eardrum. That I think I have a permanent hole in. I know that because I can blow water out of it. And so that's not good. And then what happens is once the water pressure gets so much on my ears, right, it affects my equilibrium. Right?
Sure. You can't equalize.
So a simple
thing like that, because say you go down every 33 feet that you go down in the ocean, that's one atmosphere of pressure. So, it continues to double. Ear problems can knock you right out of it.
Got it. All right. First of all, thank you for hopping on and giving us an update. We wanted to know what a former fat man was doing in Hawaii, so that's always good to hear. And let me just read you an email. Hey, Mac, I just want Chris to know what an inspiration he's been to me personally. I heard his story initially. I've been struggling to lose some weight, probably about 20 pounds, and after listening to him, I'm on my way. I'm 12 pounds into the 20 pounds, and I know I can do it, and I plan to get to the weight that I entered recruit training in back in 1987. So,
nice.
Thank you. A huge thank you to Chris. I hope he has a great time in Hawaii. And I am speaking for other people, but I believe he's been an inspiration to a lot of us in terms of using his quality assurance techniques as daily motivators to do something that most of us have struggled to do for years. Thank you, Semper Fi, bro. Have a great time in Hawaii.
Semper Fi, brother. You can do it, and you will feel, I'm sure you're feeling better. Think about it. You already lost more than 50% of your goal. And to set a goal as the way going into recruit training, that's perfect.
Holy shit. Yeah, get ready for the whole new wardrobe, too.
Well, sir, that's the thing. I've practically gone broke. I went from like 7 and 8X shirts and pants. You know, you had to keep buying, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, you know. But,
seven, to be honest with you, 7 and 8X?
Yes, sir. I have a little plan for later on in the week that I'll send you a picture just to show you the difference. But when Ann and I got married 4 years ago, I wore an 8X shirt and a 70 waist pant, and I couldn't stand for the whole wedding ceremony at the beach because I was so damn fat, sir. You know? And now I'm down to 2X shirts and basically 2X bathing suits.
Nice, 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 nice. All right, well, tell Ann we said hey. And have a great time in Hawaii. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much, sir.
Right.
Have a good day and have a good week.
You bet. Thanks, Chris.
Bye-bye.
How about that shit, man? Awesome, right? I mean, honestly, just straight up awesome. All right. We'll take a break. Montana Man joins us next. Yeah, his Day of Atonement. We'll get an update on life in Montana, and, he can offer his apologies to everybody for the Red Sox cheating like the corrupt, morally corrupt organization that they are. So more of All Marine Radio coming up next here, right after we take a quick break on the All Warrior Radio Network.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends, these are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. Live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all. So why don't you try?
On a Wednesday, we're going to slide from Hawaii, I think up to Montana. I'm not sure if it's Montana or Idaho today. One can never rightly tell. Montana Man joins us, also known by his human being name, Robbie Schwarz. What's going on, man? How's life?
It's good. Sunny. Finally seeing some sun.
Where are you? Idaho or Montana?
Montana. Got back here on Sunday.
Sunday. Did you spend Christmas in Montana or Idaho?
Montana.
Montana. All right. And you just went over to, you go over to Idaho to do your, is it furrier or farrier business?
Farrier. One's with horses and one's with fur.
So a furrier would be a fur merchant.
Or someone who makes things out of fur.
Okay. Oh, so you could be a manufacturer or a retailer. Either way, you'd fall into that broad category?
I think so.
Okay. But a farrier is one. What is the origin of the term farrier? Is it Greek, Latin?
Oh, shit. I don't know that.
Well, do you never got intellectually inquisitive? Like, I'm a farrier. What does that mean? Where did it come from?
I didn't.
Oh, so you're not intellectually inquisitive then, eh?
No, I wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't say, so you'd say you were intellectually inquisitive, just not about this.
Correct.
Really? Got it. Interesting. Okay, so...
But now you've got me thinking of it.
Well, if I was a farrier...
Latin.
It is? Or are you making that shit up? Because I'll check. I check on shit like that. How do you spell it? F-A?
Iron or a horseshoe. It's F-A... R-R-I-E-R.
A farrier is a specialist in, is it equine or equine? Hoof care.
Equine.
Equine. Including the trimming and balancing of horses' hooves and the placing of shoes on their hooves, if necessary. A farrier combines some blacksmith skills and some veterinarian skills to care for horses' feet. So would you say you're a horse foot specialist? Is that how you would categorize yourself?
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. Have you always wanted to be a horse foot specialist in your life? Or is this something that came up late as kind of some kind of therapeutic event because of all your personal problems?
That's not how it came about. But, God, I was a captain, I guess. So somewhere mid-90s, finally got a place where we could get horses again. And just working with the farrier that was doing my horses at the time got me interested in it. And he was out every 4 weeks usually. And just working with him, watching him, started doing my own stuff. And then when I retired, working for the Forest Service for a little bit, I realized I probably would do better on my own.
You mean after you had that little emotional event with the Forest Service when they didn't a little bit cavalier about fighting fires and things like that. And you were extremely unhappy. You want to go into that one? Or is that a little bit too personal?
I think we've covered that.
long story short, man, there was not a big sense of urgency to fight the fire. And Rob was like, yeah, I can't do this, man. I'm unhappy. I got to go. But your boss was really cool about it, right?
Yeah, no, he was great, and he's still a good friend. He let me go to Montana State University to horseshoeing school. Basically took all my leave and then some unpaid time. And then when I came back, basically went to see him and said, dude, I can't come back. I can't do this. And I offered, hey, I'll give you a couple weeks and, till you can find somebody else. And he's like, dude, if you hate it that much, just get the fuck out of here. I was like, sweet.
Lance Corporal Swores right out the fucking door. No, this came up because I was telling Rob a story about, we were talking about fires, forest fires, and the last time Pendleton burned in a big way, I was still on active duty. I was working in the meth operations center. And so we're getting ready, we're fired up to fight this thing. And so I call the BOC, the Base Operations Center, and they've got firefighting guys there from the National, Forestry Service and things like that. And so I call and they say, okay, everybody's located here at this number. So I call these guys, right? So, we're the MAF, we run the whole everything, right? We have helicopters and shit standing by. What do you want to do? And then I called them and said, hey, do you have can I get the weather forecast for tomorrow? Do you have something about which way the winds are going to blow so, we can put that out? And I'm listening, and it sounds like there's a fucking party going on in their operations center. And the guy's like, puts the phone down. He's stupid, doesn't put it on hold, but doesn't put me on hold. And I listen to this shit. And I'm like, there's a bunch of Southern California burning. Kent Pendleton's burning. There's structures being lost and shit like that. And they're having a fucking, it sounds like they're having a fucking great time down there. And so he comes back on the phone and he says, yeah, we don't have anything like that. And I said, are you fucking kidding me? You don't have some kind of local, wind pattern thing for tomorrow? He goes, nah, yeah, we know. Somebody might have it, but we don't. And I was pissed, man. And I remember, so I'm talking to Rob, and he's like, dude, don't even go there with me. I said, why? What's going on? He goes, I got personal issues with this shit, right? And then he told me the story about he had a little mental health episode up there and got him under a horse. Now he deals with the undersides of horses. All right, so now we saw Ferrier. What's the weather like in Montana? You said you're seeing the sun. It's still cold?
Yeah, no, it's warming up. It was -1 last night, and ooh. I think we're almost to 20 now, yeah.
That, okay.
So we're going to get a little warm streak.
So when in warm in Montana this time of year, how would you define that?
Anything above freezing.
Okay, that's legit. And just so everybody knows, what part of Montana are you? Are you close to North Dakota? Are you close to Idaho? Oh. Or are you closer to Wyoming?
Wyoming and Idaho, kind of that southwest portion.
Okay.
Are you in the mountains, not out on the plains of the
East. So you're not down in the notch. What do they call that little notch that sticks down? What do they call that?
Oh, that little nose? I don't know.
They don't call it the notch?
I think they call it the nose.
The nose? So if I recall, you're around the corner from that. So you got to go around the northwest corner of Wyoming and you're kind of up there?
Yep.
What's the closest big city is?
Yeah, either Bozeman or Billings.
Got it.
We're like smack in the middle of each of those, which is kind of handy. Hour and a half to each from the ranch.
Got it. You want to give us a beef update? I know you're a big beef provider to the United States. So how has that shit all worked out?
Well, I sold all the commercial cattle in November. So what we had left of the commercial cows, we sold them. We were kind of biting our teeth going into the sale because we didn't think we were going to do that well. The market's been shit for bred cows. So we were thinking we'd probably get, if we got $13.50 per cow. We were doing good, and we ended up averaging about 15.10.
Ooh!
Yeah, no, we did good. Calf prices were, I mean, they didn't go down. It's just been shit for about 3 years. So I don't have to feed cows every day this winter, which is nice. I still kept my own registered bunch, breeding stock type cows, so you have to manage them, but it's just a dozen of those, so they're pretty easy. Yeah, pretty easy to handle. And that's kind of the science project, just a good way to lose money.
All right, so that's, I was going to say, you know, you said the commercial cows. I was like, well, what else do you have, like pet cows? But you have breeding stock, yeah?
Right, so you're trying to make those really nice bulls, really nice cows that are going to make really nice bulls. Because actually the beef industry is just amazing on how they deal with reproduction. I mean, they've got numbers to track everything, mostly on bulls, but on registered cows as well. So it's a science project of, you know, what you're breeding with what and what you're trying to get in the end. So it's fun, but it's work.
Yeah, no kidding. What about, so why the bump in the price? Why'd you get, you know, $200 more per cow?
We, just the way we marketed them.
Oh, really?
We didn't just take it to a regular weekly sale type of deal. It was a once a year sale, and, you know, we kind of put it out there quite a bit. Actually, we sold most of those cows, went all the way to Nebraska. You know, there's guys coming from all over the place. And that set of cows we had was, we culled out 120 cows to build that set out of about 600. And then we even culled that down to 100. So it was a pretty nice set of cows for what's out there.
All right.
I think that had a lot to do with it.
That's good.
And we had a bunch of guys. You know, any type of auction like that, if you can get two or three guys that come, you know, to get those cows, you know, they're just going to build that price up.
Right.
And we probably had four guys bidding early on, and then three finally that really wanted them. So that worked out well.
Yeah, no, it sounds good. But, you know, you don't often beat the market. So, but I guess you created a little bit of your own market by marketing not just in the local area, but marketing nationally and got other people involved. So, well done. What about, all right, now we got to turn our attention to sports. I know it's going to be painful, but we got to do it. So, a tough couple weeks for the Massachusetts sports fan. We've all been watching, and most of us have been rejoicing, but we're not going to go there yet. Tom Brady, what do you think? Is he coming back? You guys already, you know, sent Jimmy Garoppolo away. Tom Brady come back?
I think he comes back if they get him some help. If they get him some wide receivers, I think he'll be back for sure. If they don't, you could just see the frustration. He had a couple points this year where he said things that you would have never heard in the past. You know, he kind of came down on receivers a couple times during the year, and you could just tell it was getting to him. I mean, his numbers were, you know, down in the 23 to 27th in the NFL for, you know, completion percentages, length of completion averages, all those were, you know, down towards the bottom. So if they get him some help, I think he'll be back. If they don't, I mean, I think he's gone, and he'll retire.
Oh, you don't think he'll play for someone else?
No.
Brett Favre did, Joe Montana did, but you think Tom Brady, will you cry? Will you legitimately cry if he plays for someone else? Tell the truth.
No. I mean, I like the guy. I mean, he's an underdog.
So you won't but you won't shed a tear? You won't, I mean, like, literally crying like a baby. You won't do that.
No, I won't.
You won't. All right. No. Hey, we're going to hold you to that, just so you know. All right. Because a lot of Packer fans, they had some serious shit going on when Brett Favre, right? And then when he went to play with the Vikings, oh, my God.
Yeah, that was bad.
That was awesome. Because they could not, they did not deal with that shit very well. And so.
I don't know how I still don't understand how he could do that.
He wanted to play. They didn't want him. Right?
Yeah, but the Vikings.
Hey, they're,
you know,
they're
nemesis.
Once the romance is over, man. Do their checks cash? Yeah, they do. Okay, I'm in. I'm good.
And the way he ended up leaving Green Bay, and I'm trying to remember the exact specifics of it, but I'm thinking it didn't go well.
No, it did not end very well.
No, and so you kind of wonder, is that a little bit out of spite going to the Vikings?
Hello. Shit happens, right? Shit happens. But you will not, like, break down and cry and have, like, Call that VA therapist that you hate. You won't call that dude again if this happens. Yeah?
No.
Okay. All right.
No.
All right, just checking. All right, do you want to apologize to everybody, all the baseball fans out there, for the conduct of your fucking cheating baseball team?
Well, let's not call it the whole team.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Let's talk.
All right, hold on. Let's get the X-Acto knife out and let's carve this bitch out right. All right, so your manager, who by all accounts is just this incredible guy, right? And now you find out he's Jack the Ripper, right? He's a fucking cheater.
Yeah. And the thing that gets me, you know, you can kind of go, okay, and they're saying it was a player-driven, you know, scheme, and... Okay, that might have been the case, but then you go back to Houston when he was with Houston, and he's the bench coach. I mean, that guy knows everything.
Yeah,
you know, so he was pulling the strings on that thing in 2017.
Yeah.
And then they go and win the World Series. And then he shows up in Boston, and they went, so we're, I mean, it's yet to be seen what they come up with for when he was in Boston.
Right.
You know, that's still coming.
Yep.
Who knows what that looks like, but you've got to believe that he knew exactly what was going on there.
Well, he's the one that he originated it, right?
That's,
yeah. Yeah, he's the guy that brought it there and installed the monitors and so do you feel like you personally need to apologize for his conduct to the rest of us?
I don't.
You don't? You don't think that's appropriate?
I don't.
So, in keeping with the loose morals of everything that it is in New England, right, you will sign up for that shit too? Unbelievable.
We did sign up for. No, let's not say that.
How's your dad doing? Your dad is a big Red Sox fan. How's he coping?
I haven't
Have you
talked to him. He's,
so
he's
in
on
dinner.
A ship somewhere in the Caribbean. He went on a cruise.
So he couldn't take it, so he, like, pulled the chute and said, I'm out.
I'm gone.
I'm gone. I cannot stick around and watch this shit.
No, I haven't talked to him about that yet. So I think he's back in like a week, I'm sure, when he gets back. And
do you think he will cancel his annual pilgrimage to Winter Haven or whatever the hell the Red Sox train now?
No, I don't think so.
He'll still go.
He'll
so
go.
Life will go on.
It will.
In spite of this incredible, you know, and again, this is the, you know, other than Pete Rose and his cheating. In fact, I was listening to some the MLB Network yesterday when I was driving back from Camp Pendleton. And, you know, they were talking about, you know, the Black Sox scandal and, you know, in the early part of the 20th century and then how this compares to that. And I thought it was interesting, you know, some of the things that they were saying because, you know, some of the people involved in this, you know, Alex Cora, supposedly this great human being, right? And he's straight up cheater. And then they started talking about the people that were impacted, right? Yu Darvish lost millions of dollars because of his performance in the postseason, and they evidently had his, you know, his pitches. Joe Girardi, the manager of the Yankees, got fired, you know, as the manager, and you know they lost on a walk off home run when Altuve hit a home run off Chapman, and so you know there's a you know, it's the implications of what they did. You know, the Dodgers lost twice. you know, to teams that were doing that shit. And so it was interesting to listen to people, you know, talk about it yesterday and just how this is, you know, the guy that's the manager in Houston, I mean, he's supposed, I thought he was one of the best managers in baseball. And he's, right? Now the question is, will he ever manage again? I think he will because he's good at what he does. And he said the right thing, which is, look, it was my fault. I should have done something. I did not do it, and I accept responsibility, right? I'm going to have to go on a hiatus here for a couple of years, and hopefully somebody will make me a bench coach, and then, you know, so maybe his rehabilitation is, you know, is 3 years. I don't think it'll be that long because that guy's pretty good at what he does. But pretty incredible, you know, turn of events. Now, there's people say, well, everybody doing it, but it doesn't sound like it, everybody doing it. So, I don't know. Have you paid any attention to it, or have you been too busy on the underside of horses, or have you just been hiding from it as a moral coward?
No. I dove into it, and then I acknowledged it. You know, put the bench coach in Houston piece in there, and it's just like, you just got to and say, that son of a bitch, you know. And then you just wonder who else knew.
Right.
But what it did, you know, of course, in the early stages, I was defensive, and, you know, everybody does it. And then you brought the question of, okay, what kind of sign stealing is okay?
Yeah.
Then, you know, with men on base, you know, those guys trying to relay signs to the batter, is that all right?
Yes, that is.
So that's been going on forever.
Right.
And then is the line when it comes to video equipment going back to the bench,
right,
and then signals from the bench being given to the plate,
right,
which it sounds like that's where the line's at. When you
right.
start bringing technology into it, all of a sudden sign stealing is bad.
Right.
You're a guy
to say nothing of, in 2017, Major League Baseball said, do not do this. Right, there are rumors that people are doing it. Do not do this, and they continue to do it. So that is like when you don't heed the specific warning. Yeah, that's normally just when my brushes with the UCMJ. When you don't heed the specific warning, yeah, it doesn't normally turn out well for you. So what was the next question I was going to ask you about? Now, do you have a big problem with Pete Carroll? And it resurfaces every once in a while when Rudy gets, like, over his skis and he forgets how much the other three of us hate the Seahawks. Right?
I don't even know why he brings it up.
Luke and I are 49er fans. We hate, like, at unhealthy levels physically and emotionally, we hate the Seahawks. Rob hates the Seahawks. But explain your hatred. You hate Pete Carroll.
Yes. I hate his style of coaching. I hate how he, you know, basically left USC as the investigation was going on for all the shit that he did or tolerated at that university. You know, and then the national title that they got, that got taken away, and he wasn't there to face the music on any of that shit. He was already gone. You know, the Reggie Bush deal, really, he knew nothing about that? And that all went down, and that guy, and the university suffered for things that he did or tolerated. And then he comes to the National Football League, and then all of a sudden the Seahawks have the most PED suspensions in the league by a long shot, you know, under his tutelage. And then just the way he handles players and lets them just be hooligans, the whole Marshawn Lynch and Sherman and the Legion of Doom and
Boom.
Those idiots running around the Boom. Yeah, it was a free-for-all. It was the prisoners running the prison over there.
Okay, so you got major issues with Pete Carroll. And then what happens is Rudy will get over his skis, and he'll bomb in something about, you know, the Seattle Seahawks being victims of bad calls, right? Or the gutty little Seattle Seahawks, right? And Napa Man and I, we tend to, like, don't say a word, right? But Montana Man, he's less disciplined than Napa Man and I are. And he starts fucking railing.
Yeah. I can't let that aggression go unopposed.
You know what? You know me. I'm a fan of, you cannot let aggression unchecked only leads to more aggression.
Yeah.
So I'm a fan of the responding in kind. But I try to stay away from the 49ers Seahawks rivalry because it's too, it's unhealthy for me. It's straight up unhealthy for me. So, yeah.
So what does the Major League Baseball do about the 2017 and 2018 World Series? They're just going to say, okay, well, we can't do anything about it. It's already gone.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I mean, it would have been interesting if they would have said, you know, hey, we are now going to rewrite this, and we are going to reapportion money. And all these players who got winning shares of this pool who cheated, right, we are now going to claw that money back, right? Other teams are going to win the American League, and then we're going to say that the Dodgers won the World Series in this year and this year. Do they do that, or do they just let the American – can you imagine being a member of the Astros going around the country next year?
Oh, man. It's just a perp walk every time that you can come onto the field.
Oh, every time you're in an airport, when you're out in public – I mean, people are going to shit all over.
How long that's going to last?
It's going to last forever.
Yeah.
Alex Rodriguez still, even though he's tried to rehabilitate his image by hanging out with Jennifer Lopez, and you know what I remember? I remember after the World Series where Houston beat the Dodgers, they brought Carlos Beltran, Alex Rodriguez, you know, David Ortiz, Big Pappy, Frank Thomas, and they bring Carlos Beltran, and they're talking about what a great sign stealer Carlos Beltran is, right? And what a great guy he is. And now he's the manager of the Mets. He denied that he had anything to do with it when he got introduced as manager of the Mets, right? And the truth is, the guy's a liar, a cheater, and a liar on top of it, you know? And so watching it has been... you know, it's been pretty interesting. So I don't know. So do you just say, look, you know, like Barry Bonds' home run record that we have done nothing about, but everybody still believes that Hank Aaron has the legitimate home run record in Major League Baseball. Everybody believes that I know that Roger Maris's 61 home runs is still the legitimate home run record in baseball, not the steroid-driven bullshit. And I heard something I thought was really interesting because I'm the only one I've heard say it in public. You know, there's some people, you know, relative to the steroids, that have never, ever been held accountable for their role. And like A.J. Hinch was and Alex Cora was and whatever the guy's name, who's the GM of the Astros, all lost their jobs and maybe will never work in that industry again. But Tony La Russa was the manager of the Oakland A's where Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire started the whole steroid thing with that thing called the Clear that was made by Balco in the Bay Area, right? And Barry Bonds did it too. But La Russa saw them with their shirts off. He saw their bodies change. Now, if you're involved in, I don't care if it's the Marine Corps or professional athletics, you know about how guys can get truly bulky. Well, if you're doing cardio all the time, you can't retain that bulk. So now Mark McGwire goes from a tall, I won't say lanky, but he's not like Hercules. He changed his body to Hercules. And, oh, by the way, he's taking batting practice and swinging the bat all the time, and he's running. You can't do that like that. And so he sees it in Oakland, and then he sees it in St. Louis. And La Russa doesn't say shit about it. The other guy is Don Fehr, who was the president of the Players Association when all this shit going on. The Red Sox had a guy by the name of Brady Anderson who was fast, who, you know, he'd hit like a dozen home runs a year. All of a sudden, Brady Anderson, when he went to Baltimore, hit over 50 home runs. Now, shit ain't right. And the union is supposed to, historically, protect the work environment. And they all knew that this shit was going on, and they didn't do anything, and they never, ever had to take responsibility for what they saw and their inaction that created an unhealthy workplace to the point where guys were doing steroids in the minor leagues, guys were doing steroids in college so that they could get a chance to make some of that money. And so I was listening to that yesterday. I thought that was pretty fucking interesting. So, anyway. You care to comment on any of that, or are you just going to sit there and drink your coffee?
Well, the players... The players' union did exactly the opposite. They go to defend these guys.
Right.
That's what gets him, and that's what gets me about the players' union. It's just, you know, are they really there to protect the players, or are they just there to make money?
Well, and that, and so again, if you protect the work environment, then come make a shit ton of money, but you don't have to pollute your body and risk your health to do it, and that's what happened. And to me, that's why, in my opinion, Don Fear is a piece of shit. He did not protect the players, and really, you know, the high end players made their money, but it's the players that know that if I could get to the big leagues with the minimum salary there is $365,000. If I can get there and stay there for 60 days, right? Right? If I can get there and stay there for a day, I'll have health care for the rest of my life. Free health care, Major League Baseball plan for the rest of my life. For one fucking day. Right? If I can get there for a couple months, you know, I'm going to make, you know, I'm going to make 30 grand a month. Right? That's more than I'll make all year in the minor leagues. And so, you know, there was this incentive in the minor leagues, you know, to do shit that was really, really risky and unhealthy, you know, depending on, you know, well, I mean, depending on where you got your steroids from. Mexico, for God's sake. So, anyway, just bad shit. Bad shit.
What do you think about what they did to the Astros organization? Do you think that's enough?
Well, I mean, they were bound. They were restricted by the collective bargaining agreement and the bylaws of Major League Baseball, which said the maximum fine you can levy on an organization is 5 million people. The valuation,
yeah,
the valuation of Houston Astros is like over $1 billion. So what is $5 million to them at the end of the day? It's nothing. The two draft.
They're going to save that money just on firing the two guys they did.
Oh my God!
I mean,
that's
covered.
Yeah, that's nothing
already.
So,
I mean, immediately. And then their draft picks. I mean, they're picking at the bottom of the round anyway.
Right.
So it's not like they give up, you know, one of the top 10 choices. They're giving up, you know, whatever number it is.
Right. So the question is, what else could you have done to them if you maxed out the? It's like your NJP authority, right? Well, at the company level, I can only do so much. Well, you know, based on the bylaws, they can only do so much, and, you know, and they're a successful franchise. I think the price that's going to be paid, right, is like I said, walking through airports in restaurants where once again somebody ruined our dinner. Some dude, like, stood up and called you a cheater. You're a cheater and a fraud, right? All the shit that you stood, you know, all the shit that you stood for, every time you go on a field, right, you're going to get booed. Right, you're gonna have people talking shit to you for the rest of your life, and so to me, that's a greater price to pay. But the players, you know, the players, it's kind of interesting, right? Kind of a little bit like a military court martial in that they granted the players immunity. We've got to get to the truth, and we'll hold management accountable, but we won't hold the players accountable. And so they said, hey, look, as long as you tell the truth, you know, there will be no consequences to you, and that's what they did. Which is, you know, if you don't give them immunity, you you can't get to the truth. You can't get to ground truth. And so, let me ask you about some military shit. You've seen and read a little bit of the Marine Corps, you know, planning, the Commandant General Berger's planning guidance. Any thoughts on that?
God.
No?
No, not really.
Okay. All right, next question. The whole Gallagher event, right? His court-martial, the president's pardon, right, his visibility, talking shit about his SEAL Trident. You were a member of that community, not the SEAL community, but the Special Ops community. What was your thoughts on that?
I think the president stepped out of line on that one. That's none of his freaking business, really. I mean, that's just none of his business. The SEAL community should have and did what I think was the right thing. Doing what they did.
In taking his shield away.
Yep.
Right, right. But the president was not having it. And then to see him, like, go on TV and talk shit about it, you're like, man, that's bad, because the good guys lost on that one. Those young SEALs that, you know, fucked with his rifle so he wouldn't kill innocent people, who shot warning shots before he could kill innocent people, who said, yeah, we're not having it. You told us we're supposed to report shit like this. And they got hung out to dry. And so pretty painful watching it. Any thoughts on the Suleiman hit?
The being able to do it in Iraq and the Iraqis, they didn't just let us do it. They had to help us. That was encouraging. You know, just having that support from them to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, he's a bad dude. And I just watching all the stupid shit that's been said on TV has been, honestly, it's been unbelievable.
That drive is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, I wish I could have been standing near that compound to watch it, and I only hope that he died a slow death, but looking at the car, it doesn't look like it.
You know, that was pretty quick.
Yeah. How about, kind of interesting the way that whole, our whole relationship with Iran pivoted so quickly, right? I mean, Iran months ago, right? The Persian Crescent, you know, reaching from Tehran to Beirut, all of a sudden there's protests in Beirut. You know, get out of here. You're not, you know, this whole Hezbollah thing is not helping us. You know, we don't have schools. We don't have health care. You know, we don't have the basic things that people live for. You know, get out. Baghdad protests against Iranian, you know, influence of the government and then what went on internally. And then, you know, then all of a sudden the president, in my opinion, with that hit and the Vito Corleone message, like, hey, if you or your proxies do anything, I'm coming for you. It's like, holy shit, man. We are a powerful country. It's almost like people, like, rediscovered that again, and our relationship with Iran changed fundamentally, you know, then. It's been pretty interesting to watch. Your thoughts on that?
No, it has been, and it happened fast. I mean, it was one event right after the other, but right after that hit, God, there was a little bit of racking time seeing what the Iran response was going to be.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think? Now, you know the accuracy, right, of precision-guided munitions. Do you think, what I said and I believe, and I saw an article the other day that said, I believe that it was back-channeled between Iran and the United States. So the President of the United States, if you do anything, right, I will shit-hammer whoever, the Republican Guards, your Navy, I will vaporize it. And if any of your proxies do shit, I'm not coming for them. I'm coming for you. Do you believe I believe that Iran communicated to the United States, we're going to shoot this shit into the dirt in adjacent to your installations. Please, you have to allow us that so that we can look at our internal population that is demanding that we retaliate and say that we did. Right? Because there's too many ways that the Iranians could have retaliated given the number of militias they have around American forces in Iraq. And they could have used rockets, they could have used all kinds of shit to do whatever they wanted to do. And that was the weak-ass response. And to me, you know, as I said before repeatedly, there are no coincidences in the Middle East. If it happened, it's because they wanted it to happen and they wanted you to see it. So I'm curious about your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I definitely believe that. You know, there was that back-channel communication that said, you know, we're just going to drop these in the dirt and we've got to save a little bit of face and we won't do anything else. And then we allowed them that ability to save some face. I do believe it.
Yeah, I don't. Again, I mean, it's you get a pretty good, interesting education when you live in the Middle East in terms of the way things work. And I don't believe in coincidences anymore. And again, I think what's at risk for them. It's been funny doing OPTs with Jeff Kenney and Tim Lynch, but and trying to get them to be like, you have to be. You know, you have to be the Iranian OPT, goddammit, stop it. But when you look at it for their perspective, if we shithammer, right, their Navy and the IRGC, that risks the franchise, given what's going on domestically in Iran. And so they got to be very careful, I think. And they are on, in maneuver warfare parlance, they are on the horns of a dilemma. What do we do here? We can't act weak in front of all these other Arab nations, right, that we've, you know, that we've injected ourselves all over the place on. But at the same time, you know, are we willing to lose the franchise if America, and God only knows what that guy's going to do, right? They walk out of their OPT yeah. Scratching their head going, well, what do you think Trump would do? Like, fuck, we don't know.
Yeah.
Right?
whoever the friggin' Red Cell guy is in that OPP.
Yeah, he's like...
Like, I have no fucking idea.
I have no idea. Like, Rain Man's got nuclear weapons, man. Nobody knows what he's going to do.
It's perfect.
But, you know, but it is, I think it's been amazing, given how weak Barack Obama was, you know, and... You know, just America's just another country, and we're going to get along with the Chinese, and we're not going to push back on their shit in the South China Sea. We're going to get along with the Russians and Hillary Clinton's fucking reset button. You know, we're going to give the Iranians back their money, and we're going to, you know, we're going to do whatever. We're going to get along with them, and we're not, you know, and you've seen, you know, I mean, shit, the president earlier today signed the, you know, the phase one of the, you know, of the trade agreement with China. And we'll see what happens with that. But it's been amazing, right, how strong the American economy is. And I think people, a lot of people for the first time have looked and said, holy shit, man, we are a strong nation, and we do have a special place in this world, and we can stand up to these assholes, you know, who restrict people's freedom and who act like shitheads around the world. So I don't know. I think it's been really interesting, very interesting civics lessons for a lot of people in this country.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in November and the work up to it.
I think, let me tell you, I am so sick. I mean, how long is the presidential campaign now? 4 years?
It's at least two.
It seems like it. Like we have it. Like last night, I mean, does anybody even know what happened to the Democratic debate? Does anybody give a shit? All these people that aren't even going to be part of the election process, you know, they, you know, to me it's just 24/7 news organizations, right, doing what they do, trying to make money in off-cycle years, and it's just, oh my God, make it go away, fuck already.
Yeah, I can't watch it.
All right, what else you got? What else you got going on today?
Well, I'm kind of lining out the timeline on we may be putting this place on the market in the spring.
Whoa!
What we're going to end up doing to put a shine on it, getting it ready to get looked at for sale. So we've got a plan laid out, and I'm just kind of divvying up responsibilities today, and making sure I'm not getting behind the curve on anything. It's just it's going to be a hectic spring.
A hectic spring?
That, and then I got to go unthaw an automatic water that just froze up again.
Automatic water for what?
That's for the horses.
Okay, got it.
It's got a heater in it, and it's got heat tape in it, going down into the ground.
Got it.
And it keeps tripping the GFI, so... The easiest solution is just go in and replace everything and not trying to figure out which individual part's causing that thing to trip. But critters, sub-zero temperatures, or below freezing temperatures and no water is not a good deal.
Yeah. No, I would not think. I'm not a critter person. I have two dogs. They don't like sub-zero weather, I can tell you that.
Well, Jack Russell's don't. No, ours doesn't.
Although Jack, when we lived in North Dakota... The snow, I mean, he'd go out in the snow. I mean, you'd see him running through the field, right? It looked like that, the dog on the Grinch, man. You'd see the snow trench moving and a tail sticking out of it, like a periscope coming up. And you're like, where's Jack? There he is. Right. He looks like a groundhog coming through the snow. Right?
Yeah.
And he gets in the house, right, and he just shakes his ass off completely and looks at you like, really? What the fuck, man? Like, come on. North Dakota, bro. Go with the program.
My boss did get him a coat, which I'm not a fan of dogs in clothes.
Yeah, that looks stupid.
Yeah, but he did. He got him a Carhartt coat, so it looks like a work vest. And it's even got like a pocket on it where you put a pair of pliers or something. It's actually tolerable. He was like, look, I got this for Elmer, man. Putting on to it. I was like, God, that kind is not bad. And, you know, he'll go outside and do the same thing, run around for 10 minutes, and the next thing you know, he's shivering. You know, just kind of humped up. Standing there in the snow, freaking shaking from tail to nose.
Right. So, right. No, Jack, of the Jack and Joe family, Jack, he likes costumes. Like, we have a Santa costume for him. He'll wear it all fucking day. And most dogs, like, try to get out of him, and they go, like, they don't like him. Like, Joe does not like that shit at all. Right? Jack, he like, I don't know if it's because he's warmer, but, and we have a tiger costume that you put it on him, he just cruises around the house in his tiger costume. It's like, and it's pretty, it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. The
Nick, when he got older, would wait by the door, and he wouldn't go out until he got in the coat. I mean, he had, as age crept up on him, he demanded his coat before he'd go run around in the snow.
Mick is also known as Fat Jack. That's what he's famous for.
Yeah. The new one, not near as fat. Old Elmer is not.
He's not as fat?
No, not even close. I kind of worry about him.
Why, because he's lean? That's the way they're supposed to be. Like, yeah, Mick was like, he was off kilter. I mean, Fat Jack. I saw him in Afghanistan. Rob shows me a picture of him. I'm like, dude, what's up with Fat Jack? And Rob's got kind of defensive. He's not fat. He's just kind of husky. I'm like, that's what all fat guys say.
That's what Lucas says.
Lucas, yeah. The Napa man, he like, all of a sudden he gets sense about it. He's like, oh, what, all of a sudden I'm a fat man now? When did that, what happened?
All of a sudden. That's where you get the name the Big Cat.
The Big Cat. That is his nickname, too, by the way. El Grande Gatito. Via en Español. All right, man. First of all, thanks for hopping on today and killing a half hour for me. I appreciate it. We appreciate all your technical expertise and your moderately contrite attitude about your cheating baseball team.
Right.
All right.
I'm not going to get past that for a while, I think.
All right, man. I'll talk to you. Have a great day.
All right. See you, Matt.
There you have it. The one and only. The man from Montana. Known on this program as, he's got a cool nickname, man. Montana Man. Yeah, I gave him that. That'll do it on a Wednesday here. A Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. The Napa man who'd been sending inflammatory text messages about Pete Carroll all morning long just sent in. I want him fired up. He's about to come on. But Montana man, he like sounds like he's in a good spot. So anyhow, that'll do it on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. Right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. If you're looking for some motivation, don't touch that dial. Because hour one is motivating. Okay, it's designed for you with a message, and that is you need to download the 3 Goals and 10 Commandments of Post-Traumatic Winning, because there's a whole lot of people that need your help. And all you got to do is listen, and you'll find them. So a little motivation there in hour one. And then in hour two, you're going to hear from both Montana Man and Chris from Webster, Massachusetts. Yeah, Chris, formerly a fat man. He's now no longer a fat man. He's in Hawaii. Yeah, going to do some stand-up paddleboarding today. So, you'll hear him talking about his vacation in Hawaii. On a day that is a recovery day for me. Yeah, so starting, a week ago on Saturday? A couple of coast-to-coast flights, about, I want to say, 14 different 3-hour versions of Post-Traumatic Winning. And I came home last night, ordered a pizza for me and Colleen, and then, like, went head down into the couch. And the recovery continues today. And and then you'll hear Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny tomorrow, and which will be interesting, I'm sure. And then the chef on Friday. So have a great day. But before I leave, I've got to do shithole weather, right? Good morning, Matt, from 200 miles northwest of Minot, North Dakota. Today's day 9 with an Arctic air mass stalled over the Canadian prairies. Currently, Churchbridge, now this is 3 hours ago. Currently, Churchbridge, Saskatchewan is overcast. Winds at 8 miles an hour out of the northwest. And the air temperature of 20 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. The wind chill is 40 below. This afternoon brings a mix of clouds and sun. Winds out of the northwest at 11. The high will be 20 below. And the wind chill sitting at 42 below. This evening, the sky is going to clear, causing temperatures to plummet overnight to 36 degrees below Fahrenheit and a wind chill of 54 degrees below. Exposed skin will freeze in 2 to 5 minutes. And then Bev sent a cartoon. Two guys standing there. One's an angel and one's God. And the angel walks up and points to a refrigerator and says, "What's in the freezer?" God says, "Canada." You know, I'll tell you what, air temperatures of 36 below zero. Wow, that's crazy. That's crazy cool. From Nancy in Northwest Pennsylvania. Howdy, Mac. If you want it, it's bright, sunny, blue sky, 38 degrees on the way to 47 in Western Pennsylvania. Winds out of the south-southwest at 3. All right. And as always, Erie copying. Beautiful. Pleasantville, Pennsylvania. The weather has been like this all week. Here's a picture from my observation post at the charter school. And it's just a pretty overcast day in Western Pennsylvania. So, have a great day. On Wednesday, we'll be back tomorrow. Recovery continues today. But what a great 10, 11 days, whatever the hell it was. Going out and meeting Marines and talking to Marines and ultimately helping Marines. And again, what I do is show them the path that other Marines have showed me. Other Marines and the mother of a Marine have showed me that you can not only live a good life after trauma comes into your life, but you can live a great life. And so that's what post-traumatic winning is about. And it's such a cool endeavor to be a part of and to go out and preach the gospel of post-traumatic winning. And that's what I do. And so, as draining as it is when you do it day after day after day and then talking to Marines after every one of those events who've been so touched by what they've seen. I've never seen anything like this, sir. Right? And it felt like you were talking to me the whole time. I mean, I hear that all the time. And so, but again, my encouragement to you all, and the reason I talk about it, is this. You can do the same thing. If you're listening to this, somehow or other you've been drawn to All Marine Radio and this message, right, make sure you download those things to your phone. And then, you know, when you hear that somebody's struggling, do not be afraid to look at them and say, "Hey, man, can I talk to you? You know there's nothing wrong with you. You know that what you're going through is absolutely normal for what you've been through. And I want to show you something from my culture. I want to show you something from the Marine Corps that somebody shared with me, and I want to share it with you. And it's legit, and it works, and it's real. And you can go there too if you walk this path." Right? And it's not an easy path. Okay, but the path that goes through isolation, that goes through alcohol abuse, drug abuse, and leads to a bad place, that's not an easy path either. So there's a better way. There's a way to live a great life. And it's a well-worn path. A lot of people go there. So don't be afraid to change somebody's life. On Wednesday, All Marine Radio, over and out.